Social Security reform faces a chilly reception in Congress. Republicans wait to hear from Newt Gingrich. Snow buries parts of the upper Midwest. Good morning for Bill Lynch. This is Frank Settapani with the CBS World News Roundup. After 2 years of looking at ways to ensure Social Security will be solvent when Generation X approaches its golden years, a government advisory group couldn't agree on a single fix, so it's ready to recommend a series of options, including private investment programs. CBS News correspondent Ray Brady tells us about the most controversial idea.
Probably today, the commission will recommend that Social Security money be invested in the stock market, but they are split on how that money should be put in. Some think that the individual should do it. Some think the government should do it. They are just as split as many of the politicians are.
Another option would be to raise taxes. Given the choices, Congress is not expected to be in a hurry to take action. The government expects Social Security to start paying out more than it takes in by 2012, and at that rate, it would tap out 17 years later. House Speaker Newt Gingrich is set to preside over a meeting that could decide his political future. Cheryl Atkinson has that.
Behind closed doors today, Gingrich will answer questions from fellow Republicans to try to shore up support for his re-election as Speaker. If 20 fail to vote for him, he could lose. Only one Republican has publicly committed against Gingrich, but Democratic leader David Bonnier claims there will be more Republican defections.
There will be a number of people on the Republican side of the aisle who will vote against the Speaker because they know these charges are serious, and they know that the Speaker has not been forthright with them.
House Majority Leader Republican Dick Armey accuses Democrats of mounting a disinformation campaign.
Where I believe the Speaker's been dealt with unfairly is all the speculative, undocumented, hyperbolic rhetoric that is floating around this case.
Political analyst Charlie Cook says this fight is a self-destructive battle of powerful congressional personalities.
I think it's bad for the process because I think to legislate, to get things done in government, you have to have compromise, you have to have cooperation, and you have to have some semblance of trust, and that's gone today.
Still, there seems little doubt Gingrich will be reelected. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News, Washington.
Speaking in his home district in Marietta, Georgia this morning, Gingrich said he fully expects to be reelected. The Wall Street Journal says the House Ethics Committee may impose monetary penalties in addition to reprimanding Gingrich for using tax-exempt funds to push his political agenda. Aides say a slight fever and a case of the flu has forced Boris Yeltsin to postpone some meetings scheduled for the next few days. They insist his illness has nothing to do with Yeltsin's recent bypass surgery. It's 3 minutes past. In Los Angeles, a familiar name from the 60s has announced his candidacy to challenge Mayor Richard Reardon in the April election. Laura Ornest of KNX Radio has more.
California State Senator Tom Hayden does not believe his radicalism in the 60s will hurt him because he empathizes with all the socioeconomic factions in Los Angeles. But he got very emotional when talking about his civil rights activism.
I went to jail with Martin Luther King. I carried the coffin of Cesar Chavez. I helped bring Soviet Jews to Israel.
Hayden says Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon wants to make L.A. the biggest city in America, while he wants it to be the most livable one. Laura Ornest for CBS News, Los Angeles.
Hayden is the first major contender to challenge Reardon. John Grinnells, headmaster of an all-male boarding school, has been picked by the Citadel to lead the military college. Grinnells will assume the presidency next summer. He says he believes any problems facing the Citadel can be fixed. The time now is 4 minutes past. The upper Midwest is beginning to dig out from a weekend snowstorm that paralyzed roads and stranded travelers. Airport manager David Oceanbauer says Ashland, Wisconsin has the look of a winter wonderland.
You can see out the windows of the terminal building, which is a little difficult. There's snow drifts approximately 10 to 15 feet high, and the entire ground is probably covered with a blanket of snow. Average depth of about, I'd say, 24 inches.
Federal Emergency Management Chief James Lee Witt inspects flood damage in Northern California today after getting an eyeful in Idaho.
Very devastating. The people out here has been hit very hard. A lot of the major roads were cut or destroyed or covered with water. People are still isolated in some areas.
Correspondent John Blackstone tells us about California after the flood.
Up and down California's Central Valley, work crews are busy shoring up the levees. A break in a levee near the town of Manteca Sunday brought new evacuations. In the town of Meridian, crews worked all day Sunday building a dirt wall to protect the community from water pouring through a break in a nearby levee.
Water level at the house behind us is up to the windows. At least it was last time we were here. It could be a little higher.
In the town of Marysville, many residents were finally allowed to return after the danger of flooding passed for their town. Water is still pouring out of the mountains, making the falls in Yosemite Park spectacular. But the flood caused extensive damage in Yosemite, ruined the home of park employee Ann Tipton.
The bathroom looks like World War III hit it.
California has been so battered by these floods, state officials are reluctant to even guess at the total cost of the damage. John Blackstone, CBS News, Sacramento.
From Santa Monica, David Dow reports that the defense is ready to resume presenting its case at O.J. Simpson's wrongful death trial.
By week's end, Simpson himself could be back on the stand as one of the final witnesses of the defense case. The first witness of today's proceedings is expected to be Robert Groden, a defense photo analyst who testified before the two-week holiday break that a picture showing Simpson in the same rare type of leisure shoes that track blood from the murder scene is a doctored fake. However, plaintiffs now apparently have a second photo, shot the same day, of Simpson in the same kind of shoes. Also scheduled this week, a return appearance by Simpson house guest Kato Kaelin, and the videotape testimony of Henry Lee, the defense forensic star. David Dow, CBS News, Santa Monica.
The New York Daily News says Simpson's younger children, Sydney and Justin, have enrolled in St. Martin of Tours Catholic School, about a mile from Simpson's Brentwood home. Simpson won custody of the children last month. Raytheon, best known for the Patriot missile, is buying Texas Instruments' defense electronics business. Texas Instruments chairman Jim Adams.
It's a great deal for everybody. It's a great deal for the employees to be associated with a winning company in the future. It's a great deal for the share owners, and that there was a good price that we receive, and it's a great deal for the community.
Another big merger may be in the works. The Wall Street Journal says Wayne Huizinga's Republic Industries, which already owns Alamo, has agreed to buy National Rent-A-Car. A sworn statement filed in Florida's lawsuit against the tobacco industry reportedly claims government officials could have launched anti-smoking campaigns years or decades sooner if they'd been given access to cigarette company documents about nicotine addiction. The Los Angeles Times quotes one former government scientist as saying tobacco companies clearly understood they were in the drug delivery business. Homicide investigators in Boulder, Colorado are preparing to formally interview the parents of 6-year-old murder victim Jean-Bonnet Ramsey. The Ramseys have already given police written answers to questions about the family routine and the comings and goings of delivery men and handymen. A 3-alarm fire routed residents of a District of Columbia high-rise this morning. Some were trapped on upper stories.
We tried to go down. I just pulled everybody back and just told them, hey, no, just don't try to make it, you know. Just go out on the balcony. Hopefully they see all of us out on the balcony. And they saw that so many of us up on the balcony with children, ladies with the children. I guess they said, well, let's get them down.
At least 5 people were hospitalized. It's 8 minutes past. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian President Yasser Arafat met over the weekend to discuss issues holding up the withdrawal of most Israeli troops from Hebron. Later, Netanyahu announced that differences remained, but some progress has been made. He charged that the Palestinians tried to add issues that weren't on the table before. Palestinian negotiator Nabil Sha'ath called the meeting very important and positive, but said it didn't produce an overall agreement. It was supposed to be a secret get-together, but reporters got wind of the meeting. U.S. Envoy Dennis Ross took part in the session. As newsman Jesse Shulman tells us, the United States continues to strive for a Hebron agreement.
The U.S. is succeeding in keeping the two sides talking. All sides say the gaps are narrowing, but we have heard that before. The real problem is that the U.S. is trying to get a hardline Israeli government to do things it says it's committed to doing, but which it nonetheless opposes heart and soul.
CBS News correspondent Jesse Shulman in Israel. The time now is 9 minutes after the hour.